if this is somebody's first time listening to this, you might want to be curious about this. You could say, nothing Jeff's saying is true, and nothing Stacey's saying is true, and you could come at it that way. But I'd ask yourself, what risk do I potentially risk in my own life by not exploring this? And if you saw the risk with an open mind, explored this, you'll see it's a no-brainer. All of those gains, the way you should be living your life, are being concentrated and stolen from you. So now ask yourself, why does the world look like it does? And why are people so confused? It's because all the gains are being stolen from them and they think it's somebody else. But it's actually them. Because they're doing the same thing every day, trying to gain more value in a system that's trying to extract more from them. And so they're inside this cage. They're inside the jail cell. And they don't know they're inside the jail cell. They think it's somebody else. And if they turn the mirror around, it's them. The jail cell door is open. And all they have to do is walk over to Bitcoin. and they're in a different world. Believe it or not, this is my sixth podcast today.
Are you serious?
It has been a very early morning.
Okay. Do you get up and stretch in between?
Quickly. You walk in and you're talking to somebody and they're looking for the next most important person so they can drop your conversation. And if I'm ever that other person that somehow people think is greater and they come up to me like that, I'll feel just as bad.
Do you feel that the way people act around you, like, is everyone like so much more calm because they know that how you are, like, they don't want to act? Like, do they not want to like be like...
People do say that. They call me when they're getting in rage or in something else. And they say, I just need a little bit of Jeff.
The thought that counts. It doesn't matter that it's 20 sats. And especially now, it doesn't matter. But one day, those 20 sats will be worth so much more.
Yeah. I use that example all the time because I think the coffees we zap around on Oster today will eventually buy cars.
Me.
No problem at all.
Thank you for making it work.
No problem.
Oh, my lights are flickering. Hold on one second. Okay, let's see how that... Oh, that's very bright. Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's see what happens here. Let me try to move those out of the way. Okay. Of course, this has to happen with you here, so I can...
It's all good. It's okay. All good.
Thank you so much. Again, thank you for joining me on my birthday. This is amazing. You had to travel tomorrow, so thank you for making it work today. For people that don't know you, Jeff Booth doesn't need an introduction, but for people that are new to Bitcoin, he's the author of the book, The Price of Tomorrow, the founding partner of Ego Death Capital, and he's one of the most respected voices in the Bitcoin space, helping people understand exponential growth and deflation. So thank you for making it again today. A million times thank you. So
no problem.
How's your day going? Was it hard to make it?
No, busy because I'm flying tomorrow. But all good. All good. I'm really glad to be here.
Are you flying for work? Is it something to do with work or is it just vacation?
Yeah, I have a core scientific board meeting in Miami. And then I'm actually flying to see B. Kelly in El Salvador.
Are you really? That's amazing. Do you see him often or is this one of the first
meetings? This is first time in person. I guess I met briefly like my last time that I was there, but this is first time spending any time.
So he's going to be listening to you talk to him about, I mean, he knows all about Bitcoin, but it's just going to be.
I think he knows all about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Hearing from you is just amazing as far as how the future is going to be changed. I do want to know, were you always curious about the way the world works and everything? Were you always like that as a kid?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. Where I would make mistakes, what I did, what the world, how that impacted other things. So mm-hmm. Yeah, from a young age anyways.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get started with Bitcoin? What was your journey like? Like, how did you find out about it? Did somebody tell you about it or did you just start figuring it out yourself?
So my technology company came to me and said, listen, you have to take this thing seriously. You got to really look at it. And this was in 2011. and they were a killer tech team. And I didn't. I was too busy building my business. So that was the first mess. I think everybody in Bitcoin has a story like that. And in 2017, I bought some, but just a little bit. I was just more playing around. And it wasn't until 2019 in writing my book and kind of the essentially aha, the take my breath away, that it was impossible to resolve the problem we were dealing with from the system that was causing the problem. And that Bitcoin would resolve that. It would impose a new discipline on the world. And that was a big shift. There was a wake-up call for me to say, to take it seriously. And then I started investing in it. Then I realized I need to move more of my time to it, and more of my time and more of my investment into it. And that was essentially why the creation of Ego Death Capital, to be able to kind of spend my time in the version of the world I wanted to see play out.
You know, the realization that you had to spend more of your time in the world you want to see and create and build is something that really stuck with me too, because I've heard you say that. And I spoke to Robin Sayer recently, and you've been on his show.
Yeah.
And he was saying that you said that to him, and it really made a huge difference in his life, because he wasn't fulfilled in what he was doing. You know, he was making good money and he was doing a job that he went to school for. But he truly was passionate about talking to Bitcoiners. And now he's doing that full time. And it was because of realizing that what you said, if you really love this thing, you have to spend more time in it. And, you know, for me, I'm a hairdresser. I work with my mom for over 22 years. So I've been doing it for a very long time. It's a small family business, but I've always been curious myself about, you know, how the world works. And when I discovered Bitcoin in 2020, I love my job, but I feel like I love my job because I help people. And finding out about Bitcoin is a bigger way to help people, because you could actually talk to them about what's going on in the world. And that topic comes up a lot at my work. So I'm able to discuss Bitcoin with people, which is nice. But doing this podcast, I haven't started it too long ago, maybe a couple months now. And I'm so happy doing it. I'm so happy talking to any Bitcoiner. And that's what I love about you too, is you talk to, you know, big or small, you're talking to the president of El Salvador and you're talking to me, you know? So the fact that you, you know, every Bitcoiner has a story, you know, there's always some, it just brings you happiness to talk to other people that understand what's happening.
You probably heard me say this before, but in this system, which is so different than the other system. So we could show up like that in the other system, but the other system is a zero-sum game. Somebody has to lose for you to win, even though we didn't know that that was true. Like I certainly didn't know that was true before my adventure and before my learning about Bitcoin and what that looked like. But once you know it's true, and then you understand Bitcoin is the opposite of that, it's a competitive game, but it's competitive in the fact that every single person, every single node, makes that network stronger for every single node in the entire world as it transitioned to that. It makes it better, more hopeful, stronger, more decentralized, more secure, and it heals the world. So when you know that, how could you show up above or below anyone else? You're not. We're not. Just every one of us is nodes doing that. What you said about Robin, maybe somebody in my life, I can't specifically, but obviously people were impactful in my life that I can't even spend the time to even think about, that might have impacted me in a way that impacted Robin, that now is impacting other people through his journey, similar to you, similar. That's how the world works. And it's a beautiful thing in Bitcoin. And the more you're in this game where everybody's winning, the more you want to spend in that game.
Yeah. And that's why with this, I thought when I first started this podcast to talk to, you know, find out about Bitcoiners and their journey, I thought, okay, who's even going to want to join me on the show and talk to me? And, you know, here I am talking to you. And it's, I'm trying to stay composed, because this is just incredible. But knowing that there's a lot of people that have booked with me and I'm very busy doing it, and I love every minute of it. Like for me, it's like I can, you know, anytime I have off of work. If I have free time, I want to talk to Bitcoiners. So it's so much fun. Yeah. And it's not tiring. Sometimes you think starting something new like this, it's going to be exhausting, but it's so energizing. It gives you energy.
And then you see all sorts of other opportunities and you meet people that introduce you to other opportunities just by spending more time in it.
Yeah. And I think that's what something I might have heard you say is that, sorry, my dog's running around in the background.
It's all good.
Okay. But something I heard you say about that was that you don't even know until you start to spend time in that world how it could shape and change, especially because it's so early. You can meet people and just the fact that everyone cares and wants to help each other and, you know, enjoys talking to other people in this space is something that is almost how you can't fathom the exponential growth ideas. You can't fathom how this can change. You know, just seeing how much Robin's journey has changed in only a year and a half or so. I didn't realize he only didn't start that long ago. So this is just a beautiful thing. It's
wild to watch this. And there's people today that are looking at, or you looking at Robin. So I remember Natalie Brunell at one of the first Bitcoin conferences I went to. I can't remember whether it was 2019 or 2020. Couldn't get in to one of the parties or one of the things. They wouldn't let her and her friend in, and she got into the Bitcoin conference on a press pass. And this is in her former job as somebody in the press, who from this decision just decided to spend her time in Bitcoin and look at her and look at what that created. And so everybody's looking at all these people and without a realization that a lot of these people started exactly where they are. And just decided to go and spend more time, and that time, as they learned more, got better at whatever part of this thing that they were really good at and helping others.
Yeah, I give people so much credit that do that, that just make the decision, like how you did, and you had that shift, you know, where you just said, I need to do this, and you realized you couldn't change things from inside that same system. So you thought, I need to just keep building the world I want. And for anyone who decided to leave and do that is just amazing to me, because I feel like for myself, I had strength from my husband. First of all, he encouraged me to do this, but also there's this amazing community on X that we created, and we just started all interacting with other small accounts, and we call ourselves the Bitcoin Army now. And it's just a whole bunch of us that just understand Bitcoin, and we just want to, you know, show each other that we actually are friends. We actually enjoy each other's ideas and art and all that stuff. And because of all that, you know, I was asked by, again, Paula, who was who you've been on her show too, and she
was earlier today too.
Were you really? That's amazing. Yeah, and she's also so like I feel like she was the first person, and I told her thank you for being the pebble, like, you know, the ripple in the pond, you know, that you reached out to me to ask me to be on your show, because I had never done a podcast before. And she reached out to me because she saw the community building that was happening, and she wanted to talk to me about it. And I was very nervous because I had never done it. And my husband told me, you know, whenever you're passionate about something, you'll find the words. So he said to just do it, you know. So I did it because of him, but also because of my community. I wanted to show them that if I could do it, if I have never done this before and someone asked me, what kind of a leader figure am I if I don't just go and do it? You know, we've all been in this space for a few years now. I know enough where you shouldn't be afraid to speak your mind and share your, you know, even other people's voices, you know, how I'm doing. I just wanted to show them strength so that they could feel empowered, but they gave me the strength to do it in turn. So it's just crazy how that feedback loop, like the positive feedback loop of Bitcoin, just shows up in our community and stuff.
Yeah, you are the mirror. It literally the reflection is you, right? And we, it's hard to see. For some people, that's hard to see that you literally create everything from what you. But I think, especially in Bitcoin, I think more and more people are starting to realize that, and and that's why it touches everything. It literally touches. It has to touch everything.
It's hope, but it's you know, it's just this brighter future. But just how you said that you don't know who may have impacted you, that, you know, you're in turn impacting me. when I told Paula, I thanked her for being, you know, that first pebble that, like, you know, the ripples in the pond. And she said that she wasn't the first pebble. It was you that reached out to her. So then I just thought, you know, and then now you're saying that about whoever may have, you know, impacted you or influenced you in your past, that it's just amazing how the reflection and everybody connecting is just, it's such a, and that's why it feels spiritual to people, because we feel, we have this shared passion, and because we see truth and we're, actually hopeful about the future, and there is a future because of it.
Yeah. So it's a wild, what a time to be alive. Like what a time to be able to participate and do what we do in this time. It's just remarkable.
Yeah. And your book was incredible. I had so many, I'm sure you've orange pilled like half of the Bitcoin community at least, but, so you were writing the book before you actually realized that you had to spend more time in that system. You were actually writing about more of technology and how technology is changing the future.
Yeah. So I wanted to understand, I was wrestling for years. Why weren't prices falling? If the free market was deflationary, and the natural state of the free market was deflationary, and you had technology that was like a super us that was going to turn in to be able to do any one of our jobs better and faster, and then we would use the things that gave us more value. So of course we would use the things that gave us more value, which had to compete with other things that we were using before. And we would only use the things that give us more value if they gave us more value. The output of that has to be prices fall. So I couldn't understand why broadly prices weren't falling. And so in digging into that and understanding how we had constructed this Frankenstein monster of a control system based on inflation, and the only reason you had any inflation then was the theft from the natural productivity of the world. When you say you're going to have faster productivity, that means faster deflation. And people have it warped. They have it, growth means faster monetary printing, or they have growth and productivity completely inverted. Productivity is faster deflation. And so because that was so hard to understand for people, I wanted to chase it to the sand and then explore what would happen from both systems. Why this control system would get worse and worse, and why most people would find themselves trapped in it, making it stronger. And yes, I came through that portion. I was learning kind of Bitcoin at the same time. But even at the end of the book, Bitcoin was only a paragraph. They called it a potential solution. And so yes, I was gaining a lot more. Yeah, but I would say, in honesty, I thought at that time it had probably a 5%, at least my version of Bitcoin at that time, because I hadn't done enough work on it. I thought it had probably a 5% probability of failure at some point in the future. And I wondered, could it resolve this paradox? Could it impose a discipline on the world that had no discipline? And could it impose that, whether or not we wanted to price from the other system or not? So I spent a lot of time through that process, and then after that process, trying to tear down that argument from the other side on where were the risks, how would it fail, and as I did that work, I became convinced that it won't fail, it will reprice everything, and part of the reason it won't fail is because it attracts the best and the brightest to be nodes and to care about, to extend it into a protocol that reshapes the world. In fact, it is us. It is us voting our time to a system that heals us. And so how could it break if we wouldn't break?
It's powerful.
So that's and then when you see yourself in service of that and with everyone else, whether or not they're first time Bitcoiner, first time just trying to, when you see yourself at that, it was a journey for me. It's a journey for every single person as they go through this deep understanding that the world that they've constructed and their knowledge base is based on a flaw. and all of the assumptions they make about the world based on a deep-rooted flaw of a control system that extracts their time. Once you know that, it becomes an easy choice. So I think what happens in Bitcoin, for people kind of understanding this as they go through, is first there's no way it could look like that, right? This is the way the world. So it's their own mind changing, right, over time. And then, oh, perhaps I needed just a hedge against this. I needed it as just a store value. And then they go deeper and they wait. This could be more. And they don't know it, I don't think. Maybe some really do once they're deep into this. But what's happening is they're moving their time into it. And the deeper they go, the more they spend in this, and they bring others. And so you have this network adoption that the worse the system gets, the better this one gets. And it's spreading that. It really literally is us. We could easily stop today and vote our time in the other system. But who do you know that has gone deep down the rabbit hole in Bitcoin that would ever do that?
Yeah. I know. I don't know anybody that would come out. Like, people try to find ways that it wouldn't work and reasons that it would fail. And the more you learn about it, the more you realize it can't. And I think people that don't understand it, they just think that, you know, they don't trust. People are conditioned to understand that they think the world works by, you know, computers and technology being hacked, because you have everything being hacked, like your unemployment. Somebody, all of a sudden you get letters in the mail that say you sign up for unemployment. You hear the Treasury Secretary, the Treasury of the United States gets hacked. You hear all these hacks and you think, well, if Bitcoin is a technology, then what if that gets hacked? But then when you realize the strength of the network and how much it would take to hack it, you know that that's not something that's going to happen. So the more you trust that your money is safe, I think the more you understand Bitcoin and you actually see that it could be a solution. And then people just think that it's a scary thing. You know, they have to understand it more. The one thing I thought that was interesting that you mentioned was I heard you talking with Walker, and I've heard you speak many times, but whenever I hear you speak, I hear something new. And I love that you said that the internet was a protocol, and Bitcoin, when people call it a technology, it's a protocol. It's not just a technology. It's more than that. And, you know, I think you mentioned when the internet was starting up, there was all these companies trying to control it, and then decentralization won. So that's like how Bitcoin is.
Yeah. So that's So technologies are winner take most until a new technology replaces the old technology. And then that happens again. So it keeps on repeating. Protocols are winner take all. And those protocols come in layers. And so if you research kind of from the dawn of the beginning of the internet, which was late 60s by DARPA, and it was built as communications in a nuclear holocaust that would survive in a nuclear holocaust, that was the base layer. And then it built in layers that then everything is on top of the internet. What's happening today in Bitcoin is the first part of the base layer of the new internet, the new everything, is what you call Bitcoin today, is the decentralized security bounded by energy protocol. And it's imposing new rules on society, and it's also building in layers that is adding more functionality, more privacy, more payment technology. All of these functionalities are coming in layers on top of Bitcoin that are tethered to its decentralization and security. So even as those layers are built, then one something could fail, but it doesn't take down the whole thing. And those technologies, those layers, like Lightning, when 4 years ago, it was kind of a backyard hobbyist project. It was meant to be at scale, but it wasn't at scale yet. And so it hardens, it gets better and better and better. And 4 years ago, payments failed all the time on it. Today, payments rarely fail. So you can start to see more and more things moving to that protocol.
I see that. And I think that from 4 years ago, so much has changed as far as Lightning getting stronger and even you know, AI getting so much stronger. And one thing I wanted to ask you about to see your thought on this, because just the same way that you can't comprehend exponential growth, it's hard to understand how that would actually unfold. I wonder sometimes about how there's so much fear around AI and technology expanding so quickly. But sometimes I think that AI is one of those things that right now we have, you know, certain companies that are building these, you know, these AI technologies. And I think because these layers could be built into Bitcoin, I wonder how you think about that. Like, do you ever feel like AI will be decentralized and it won't be controlled by a company or corporation? Do you ever see that kind of being a layer on top of Bitcoin? I think would be a safe way to think of that.
Yeah. So a different way. So we're connecting two things that are different in this way. So the protocol, effectively what the protocol is doing is saying, you shall not be robbed. Your money cannot be robbed. It is the first free market ever that you cannot be stolen from through inflation. So thou shalt not cheat. That's the protocol.
Yes.
If you're operating on the protocol, that means all productivity in the world now and forever will flow to you in the form of lower prices. That means there is zero risk of AI getting controlled by a corporation. All prices of AI are free for you forever. It keeps on falling. And for all of the people on this protocol. Now, if you're measuring in the other system, if you're in the centralized control system, then that AI and the companies that control it must drive fear into you that there's going to be Armageddon from the AI to drive regulation so that you give them more power. And how will that power accrue? It'll accrue by stealing that power from you through the manipulation of money. So all of these systems are like, they're just completely opposed. AI will be free in the world I describe. AI will be used to control you in the other world. It's actually already being used to control you. Most people's minds inside, even in X, by the way, and it's why your group try to move them to Noster.
We all kind of share our Noster accounts.
Yeah, because it's a centralized structure, and if you're providing if you're against a centralized message, inflation is normal. And as that gets more and more centralized, if you're against that, you will be cut off. Your algorithm will not see that voice because that system can't allow that voice into it. So you see today on YouTube, things that they don't like are being censored. You see it in X in different regions of the world being censored. And so you can't have global free speech.
Well, so many members of our group. Yeah, like one thing that X thinks is that I think that when we interact with each other a lot on X, sometimes we get limited, like our accounts get blocked so we can't reply on things because they probably think, oh, these must be bots. But they're not understanding that we're actually a community, that we care about each other's thoughts and we're commenting back and forth. And it's like, we are real humans, and don't you want interaction between humans? Like we are. But then we've seen over and over again how so many of our accounts have gotten suspended on X, and I had to fight to get my account back a few months ago. And then now I had a separate account for my podcast that's been suspended, and I can't get it back now for a few weeks. So it's just, it really is infuriating when you think it's supposed to be a platform for free speech, but we keep getting censored in that way. And it is real people that are getting blocked and people that are paying monthly.
And here's the thing. It's under the guise of being free speech. So if you go back to first principles, in an inflationary monetary system, if the only thing that drives inflation, if the only reason there's inflation, not from zero, from the actual productivity rate in the world. So if the productivity rate in the world was -5 or -10% today, and AI was moving faster, then what it would mean is if it was -5, then next year it might be -10 or 15%. In other words, in that world, every single human on the planet get richer by that rate, even if they didn't work, because all of the other people trading and working would drive the process, and that would continue forever. We would always find problems to solve, and all the problems we solved would resolve and lower prices for everyone. Abundance. That's the world that Bitcoin is pricing. Anybody in the other system, all the centralized actors, are essentially saying, we don't like that system. And your time feeding them under a belief it's free speech, it can't be, because it has to come, it has to resolve, it has to centralize faster and faster. So while the tech companies are extracting more and more, and most people are looking through all of the lens of the what they're extracting inside that lens, and they don't know they're being farmed, their minds are being farmed, they're being able to believe what the centralized systems want them to believe, whether that's fight against the globalists versus the technocrats, right? Where the globalists are bad, but you're in the free market system now in the same centralized control system. Nothing has changed. You're feeding it stronger. And it's preying on everybody in that. So if you know that, and same thing you're doing is you're moving, first you move, protect your money, and you start to understand Bitcoin. Then you start moving some of your time to Noster and other things, so you're completely outside of there. Now you cannot be shut off. Nobody can tell Stacy what she can say or can't say. Nobody can stop that. Now you start to build community, and you build a whole bunch of other value for a whole bunch of people who are stuck over here and don't know they need it yet, that you lead them to, just like you're doing on the podcast, you help others by solving, by kind of showing what you used to do wrong, what I used to do wrong, and moving your time.
Yeah. And I think that when you mentioned that, you know, when you first start to understand Bitcoin, you think you're investing in it, then you realize you're saving your money in it, then over time, it's you're moving your life into it. So now I find it a blessing that before, I used to look at Twitter and I would be sucked into that, like, oh, what's trending right now? What kind of fear-based, or what's happening in the world that's kind of scary right now that I'm addicted to watching? But now that I have this podcast, which is making me very busy, and I'm spending a lot of time doing the videos, editing and all that stuff, I still interact with my community, but I'm not spending time on X looking at all the crazy news and trying to figure out like all the madness that's happening. So it's really, really, it's a great feeling. I feel like I'm free because I'm spending more time talking to Bitcoiners. I feel like I'm not a prisoner of news and all that toxic kind of behavior and, you know, just scare tactics and everything. And then so when you mentioned earlier that, you know, we are Bitcoin, like all of us are Bitcoin, we've mentioned that before in our group too, how when you choose to spend your time on something, just like how we call Bitcoin we call Bitcoin time, like you're saving your time in this. So when we are spending our time with people, we're spending that currency with other Bitcoiners, you know, so you're literally our interactions, our transactions with each other. So it's like, we are the nodes, we're the ones using the network. And we think of it like we are actually transacting our time with each other when we spend time with each other. And it would be nice if we did create more, build more on Noster, because seeing what's happened to so many of us, you know, getting censored and suspended is really sad. It's like you have to fight to get it back. You can't talk to a human. And I think unless you make a lot of noise, and I really only think that's why I even got my original account back, was because a lot of the people in the community were outraged and they started tweeting about it. So there was a lot of maybe noise created. So I think that it's definitely something that I would like to be on Noster more. It's definitely a free, you know, you could post YouTube videos too on there, but it says something I noticed, it removes some sort of tracking or something when you post a YouTube video tracking on there.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I don't know what it means, removes, but
yeah. So they remove the tracking code, so YouTube can't track the Noster views. And so that just happens naturally. But even on YouTube, eventually Noster is going to have its own video format like YouTube, and you won't need YouTube.
That's amazing.
There's already Noster nests that have essentially Twitter Spaces in Noster. And so a lot of this technology, it's early, but as you spend more time in that ecosystem, you realize it's not just a Twitter clone. It's a protocol it's a protocol layer that frees you, and it's developing and it's creating all of this additional value. So people are gonna see, just like people who were early for Bitcoin saw more value, and the earlier you are, and that's gonna go on forever. Same thing is gonna happen on Nostr.
The thing that's nice about Nostr is like everyone's trying to interact so much on X to fight for this, you know, monetization so much. Like we're all trying to get impressions and we're trying to get monetized. And I ended up giving up on that because I thought I'm spending so much of my time pushing for this when eventually when I do get paid, I'm going to get paid what? Like I'm just going to, it's like I could just work a little harder at my job and buy Bitcoin with it. You know, it's like for the a little bit that I'm probably going to make and just spend so much of my time trying to get impressions. It wasn't worth it to me. But when you go to Nostr, just seeing how kind other Bitcoiners are and how you actually have the option, like you don't have to wait to get monetized on Nostr, but if somebody sees something you post and they send you 20 sats, you know, so it's like you can get those lightning tips and people just show you that they're appreciating your work by zapping you back and forth. And I really like that because it feels like you're, you know, able to just even, it's almost like that whole idea, like the thought that counts. It doesn't matter that it's 20 sats. And especially now it doesn't matter, but one day those 20 sats will be worth so much more. But the point is that people are showing you, hey, I appreciate you and your time, you know? So it just, that's what it's meaningful.
Yeah. I use that example all the time because I think the coffees we zap around on Nostr today will eventually buy cars.
Isn't that crazy? I know. Yeah. One day I did a podcast with somebody who, he wanted to show how easy it was to send a Lightning payment. So he held up his QR code to the camera and then I sent him, I think 20 sats or something. And he was like, thank you. And one day these will be worth $100 or something. And so I got paid for my first YouTube gig. So he was like, we just had like a mini celebration because he was like, thanks for paying me. I think when you tell other people this stuff, they think it's crazy. And that's why your exponential growth, what you talked about and how you explain it to people, you know, that whole idea of compounding and how you talked about folding a piece of paper. I remember when I first heard you say that, that was like, I think what really got me to understand Bitcoin. But once you realize that, you know, because of the supply schedule, because it's a deflationary supply schedule, because of its limited total supply. And when you think of that and you think of it in that exponential growth, like the folding of the paper to the moon, and that hit me because I thought, we're looking at Bitcoin like it's an investment, but really this thing is going to take off.
Yeah, it's a, and again, that paper folding analogy, the 50 folds to the sun example, what I was trying to get there is what would happen in AI, right? The rate of, so remember when the book was written, it was written in 2019, and there's a paragraph in the part that I wrote on AI saying that we measure AI in decades now. Pretty soon it'll be years, then it'll be quarters, then it'll be months, then it'll be minutes, then it'll be seconds. And so what's happened? And because we've had the exact same rate of growth in AI for about 70 years, exactly the same. It's just an exponential growth rate where most people are measuring linear, so they're surprised. And so they can't see how the movie's playing out because they're watching a frame of the movie. But if you understand how the movie's playing out, if you understand the right path and what to expect, then everything else becomes easy. So you knew that. So if you read the book now, and we probably have, and you look back in time and say, was this prediction accurate on AI and what we're seeing? It's exactly accurate. But that's looking backwards still, like right now. And looking forwards, it's going to move faster. It's going to merge with robotics. Looking forward, it's so outrageous. And all of that is productivity gains. And so it forces a question, if all of these AIs can do, in some of the companies right now I'm involved with, there's agentic AIs that are doing independent tasks together, like a team, but the best, like having the best person in the planet that never sleeps, doesn't do, and learns every day, combining with the best person, a different skill set, getting better and better and better, and then using that knowledge to get better, to do tasks. And it's, and so you force you, and this is something I saw coming a long time ago. So if that's the best, if that took somebody 8 years of college and or whatever to be able to do this, and a whole bunch of practicum to be able to do this, and this AI is doing this way better than they can, and it learns and it never sleeps and it's free, and they can merge with another AI that's doing a different task, and what do we do? Because here's the thing. If a company doesn't use that, you won't use the company. Because the company that uses it will provide so much value to you. You'll tell yourself, you'll say to yourself, why don't they just hire more people? But you would never use the company that was bloated and cost way more. You would use the company that provided more value to you. So this is, it's so important. We are part of the situation. And so if we're part of the situation, voting for more value all the time, and that value is being served up to us, and if we don't use it as businesses, then our business fails. Then how could that output not allow that productivity gain to flow broadly to society? Because if it didn't allow the productivity to gain flow to society, it means that all of those gains, the way you should be living your life, are being concentrated and stolen from you. So now ask yourself, why does the world look like it does? And why are people so confused? It's because all the gains are being stolen from them and they think it's somebody else. But it's actually them. Because they're doing the same thing every day, trying to gain more value in a system that's trying to extract more from them. And so they're inside this cage. They're inside the jail cell. And they don't know they're inside the jail cell. They think it's somebody else. And if they turn the mirror around, it's them. The jail cell door is open. And all they have to do is walk over to Bitcoin. and they're in a different world.
I love that you said that, because I had written down something that I wanted to tell you is there, but you said it in a million times better way. Like, this is just so cool to see it like that, because you do feel like you're trapped in this prison where you're like, oh, all I have to do is turn around. Like, you're not stuck there, really. You just don't know there's an exit. You don't realize you can turn, I guess. But one thing I thought was, it reminds you of when you watch a horror movie, and it's like the way I felt, like when you're in this system, you feel like you're just scared. You're on like fight or flight mode, and you're just trying to figure out life and inflation and expenses. And then you feel like you're just trying to escape. And then you finally escape this horror movie, and you get outside the murder house or something, and you're like, oh, finally I got out. I feel like I'm at peace now. You know, you feel, but then once you get into the safe space, then you want to help other people who are victims in some kind of scary house. You're like, hey, help me. I'll open the door for you. Like, get out of there. It's scary. So that's, we kind of want to help others, you know, see that, because we're like, you know, you could just have to find the opening, you know, the getting out. But I love the jail idea. I think that's really cool, because nothing's stopping them from actually doing it.
It's an open network. It's an open decentralized. Nobody can stop them. It's just it's wide open. Government can't stop them. Nobody can stop them. It's wide open for anybody to use globally. First global free market that ever existed. But people's fear of what somebody else will do is stopping them, or what they don't know. And so even if this is somebody's first time listening to this, and this is, he says, it would mean you might want to be curious about this. You could say, nothing Jeff's saying is true, right? And nothing Stacey's saying is true. And you could come at it that way. But I'd ask yourself, what risk do I potentially risk in my own life by not exploring this? And if you saw the risk from the system risk and what you're doing likely in this, and then just with an open mind explored this, you'll see it's a no-brainer. I think that first step for people to say, okay, how do I do this? What do I get started? It feels like such a leap, because it doesn't look like anything they've ever done before. You wonder who to trust. There's so many scammers in this all the crypto nonsense and everything else. And so find somebody that has a deep work experience, proof of work that goes back a long time. Look at what they said a long time ago. Look at what they say now. Look at if they're constantly a good actor. Follow them. Do that work. Find people that you trust in this network, and build from there.
Yeah. And I think that's why once you realize that when you do start doing those research, like doing that research and finding that the people that have that constant, trust, that you realize that they are not a bad actor. You realize that their beliefs are the same and they're looking for truth. Those end up always being the Bitcoiners, because we realize, and that's when you realize that the other crypto space is not like Bitcoin and why it's so different. And yeah, it feels like a leap of faith, because I think it is because people are so conditioned to live in fear. And I think that with all of this access to information and news that we have all the time, it's like, as much as people hate being scared, they're also addicted to like wanting to like see what's happening and to be like, oh my God, this is so much drama and so freaky. What's going to, because it also depresses you. You know, when you're in a depressed state, you're not going to want to go take a chance at something. You're going to think, well, I'm just getting by every day. You know, you're not going to feel like you have the, you know, the energy to, just like how you don't want to start a diet because you're like, what's the point? You know, you're not feeling good about anything, so you don't want to take care of yourself. But that's why I think so many people in Bitcoin, they decide to, you know, the whole idea of proof of work and how we are Bitcoin, you want to start doing that with your own body and yourself, because when you have hope for the future, you actually want to be around for that future. So you start to realize that there's so many false beliefs, like food is medicine. You know, you could actually eat well and get better. That's why it touches so many parts of our lives. And that's why we're so happy. Like Bitcoin people are just so much happier.
Yeah. Yeah, on a general basis, I think you're exactly right. Now, I think that the one thing we have to be careful of is in-group, out-group bias, because every group of people think they wouldn't be in a group if they didn't think that group was better. So it creates in our minds our group, we're smarter, better, everything else. And what that means for somebody else just entering this would feel like
totally intimidated.
And it's not, that's why it's not that, or at least it's not that for me. I think there's beautiful people everywhere. I think there's that every country I've been to 85 countries. When you actually see what people look like on the ground versus what you've heard that looks like from your media, you know, it looks totally different. What people actually are. We all have the same hopes and dreams, all different skill sets in getting there, and that group bias is a way to control you. So if it looks like that, and everybody has their specific genius, then I might, like 10 years ago, I discounted Bitcoin and I didn't know what I know today. The only change is I've been curious and I've gone. So I'm no better than I was 10 years ago. Vastly different person. My life is different, and I want other people to see that. You can imagine if I talked like I was more important or better, it would just push away more people.
Right. Yeah, and that's why I love that your company, it's called Ego Death Capital, because the way that, and I don't know if you've always, do you feel like, I don't know if you've changed since you found out, or do you feel like you've become more of a humble person, or more, you know, less ego in that way because of how you've changed? Or were you always just kind of that kind soul, you know? Because there's a lot of people who just, they have this idea that they want to be better than other people and show off for other people. But that's why we like the Bitcoin space, because so many, I guess not all, but I guess so many Bitcoiners are more humble. You know, it's not trying to show off what you have or what you're buying and, you know, just try to make people feel bad about anything. You're just trying to save your time for the future. So we're more humble that way. And I think that's what a lot of people go through when they find Bitcoin. So your company being named Ego Death is just the best name ever.
Yeah, I didn't name it. My partner's named it, but I love the name because it does capture that. Nico and Andy came up with the name, and all I did was.
Did you all found it together?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a wonderful name. I mean, it's perfect.
And then to your other question, has it always been so? It's funny, as you were talking, I was out for drinks with some friends last week, And I said specifically how much I've changed kind of through the adventure and everything else through my life. And one of my friends, I've been friends with the same group of people since I was 5 years old. Still, it's expanded a lot. But so a friend of mine that I've known for 45 years, she said, nothing has changed, Jeff. You're exactly the same person you've always been. Maybe a little wiser, maybe not making as many mistakes, but exactly the same person as you. And so that struck me because I don't feel like the same, but somebody else, that's what somebody else's view of mm-hmm. that was.
That's funny because yes, the way that they see you is like, no, you're the same guy, you know, but your thoughts, I feel like probably your thoughts about the entire world has shifted so much, you know, that you feel like a completely different person from the inside out. You know, but they see you and how you act and they're like, okay, you're the same, you know, maybe they see a few little tweaks, but that's an interesting observation that how you view it is like, you think you're like this whole different person.
Totally.
Yeah. That's so funny. And even when you were talking about different types of people, like everyone having this, like, there's so many good people in the world, but you're just made to be so scared because, I went to Greece this past summer with my family. We're all Greek and I haven't been there since I was a kid and our kids have never been to Greece. So we decided to travel out there and, you know, go for the summer. And we were told by so many other Greek people just to be careful because there's so many thieves and they're going to try like don't go into groups of people, like stay away from groups because there's so many people pickpocketing. And we were pretty scared of that. We're like, oh my God, is everyone going to try to rob us everywhere we go? Like how scary is Greece? And when we went there, we didn't have a single even inkling of fear ever. And nobody ever even came like close to us where it looked like they might be shady or try to grab my purse or anything. So I just don't know how people just, it's like, do they enjoy just scaring people? But when I saw a whole different group of people. Greece, everybody was, it was so different from here. Like you go to a bakery and you buy, you know, morning, you know, breakfast foods for your family. And they're just giving you an extra thing. Thank you for being a customer here today. Here's an extra pastry, you know, just on us, just because, you know, or they bring you an extra beer during dinner because you came to their restaurant. And that never happens in America. I thought that was so interesting. and you probably witnessed different things like that being to 85 different countries. But it's just funny how I was like, wow, that is not how America is. Because I don't know if it's because it's all more corporate and not as much smaller family run, you know, they can't do that. I don't know.
Yeah. I think is people are people and you, and I've met just brilliant people in the US too, brilliant people in Canada, brilliant people all over with their specific thing that they're just so great at. And when you strip away all the madness, and you get to have a real authentic conversation with somebody about them and you're in the moment. It's the same thing everywhere in the world. Like it's literally the same thing. We are all the same.
Do you feel that the way people act around you, like is everyone like so much more calm because they know that how you are, like they don't want to act. Like, do they not want to like be like.
It's funny. It's just, I find that funny. People do say that they call me when they're getting enraged or in something else, and they say I just need a little bit of Jeff.
Do you like calm them down?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess otherwise they wouldn't call. But
that's so funny. So,
yeah,
yeah. I was thinking about somebody that might be one of those people that's really boastful or energetic, or just not energetic, but really one of those people that just loves to show off. But then when they get around your presence, do they just kind of like get humbled too? Like, they're just kind of like, all right, he's not about that stuff. So I'm not going to do it either. So do you see people are a lot more calm around you a lot, or do people still?
Yeah. I guess I spend time with people who fill me up. I spend time with, and so my entire life is filled with just to me, from my view, I don't necessarily think their view, but from my view, I wouldn't spend my time unless there was a deep love and connection. That's how I spend my time. And so that means that when I'm in that, when I'm in that mode, I'm not trying to get anything out of it. It's the connection. So out of that, it does drive presence. So if I'm in that, I'm not constantly on my phone chasing or the next most important thing. I'll tell you something that when I was early in business, my lawyer said, you're in this tech business, you have to go to these networking sessions because that's the only way to raise money for the tech business. And I would go to these and I felt like I'd been licked. And what I mean by that is you walk in and you're talking to somebody and they're looking for the next most important person so they can drop your conversation. I thought, wow, if this is the way this looks, there's no way I will ever want to run a big business if it looks like this, because I won't show up like that. There's just no way. And if I'm ever that other person that somehow people think is greater and they come up to me like that, I'll feel just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've been aware of that in both, because what is it for and why? Like, why do you, and when you're aware of that and you realize that the people in your life, you can actually help them inspire incredible greatness. You don't need anybody else. You don't need to go to the next most important person if you spend your time really, really, really valuable. So I think that just always stuck with me. And I've never looked at the world above me or below me. I've looked at everyone as equal or equal and different skill sets, different genius that I could learn something from. And then spending time with people that I wanted to spend time with.
Yeah, that really, it's a really, makes me feel really good when you say that, because I feel like that a lot too when I talk to all different people, because, you know, you're just happy to learn and have a conversation, just how celebrities, you know, some people think, oh, it'd be nice to be famous. But once you are famous, you can't go shopping anymore. You can't go to a grocery store, and you wish you were just like a normal person that could talk to normal people. And sometimes when you do get it, you're looking for the next best person to talk to, or, you know, deal to make or something. You're not feeling like you're doing it because it makes you happy. You're doing it because you're trying to, you know, be better or be more powerful or something like that. And it's not a great feeling. I don't know, like some people really love that. And I think that's what's probably why you enjoy talking to everybody so much, because you feel like it doesn't make you feel bad, like how you would feel if people came up to you treating you like you're, you know, somebody that is better than everybody else. Like you wouldn't feel good about it. So talking to me and talking to anybody else, we're all people, you know, so you're just getting
it's
to,
not that, it's not better, just different experiences, different. So there is no better. It's just different pieces that make me successful it's successful in my way. And that doesn't need to look like anything else. And just for as many things as there, I have tethered liabilities of things I'm terrible at. Right. That if you measured me by that thing, you go, you'd wonder how my wife could stay with me. Right.
Yeah. Well, there's something that I thought was pretty funny when I was thinking about, you know, cause again, it was a little crazy for me to think, wow, like that's so nice that, you know, you were going to come talk to me on the show too. But after speaking with Paula and knowing that you've been on her show a couple times and her telling me about how nice you were, because she was mentioning that the first time you spoke with her, she started to get teary eyed and she had to go wipe her eyes. And she said that you were just so nice about it. You didn't make a big deal out of it. You didn't make her feel bad or think, oh, what is she doing, you know, acting like this, but you were just so kind. And that made me feel so comfortable knowing that I would talk to you, because again, when you watch somebody a lot, you know, I've seen a lot of your podcasts, you can get this idea of a person, you know, you think, oh man, like I'm nervous, you know. But one thing that I was thinking was, well, I'm just going to think that Jeff Booth is just somebody that needs a haircut and everyone gets haircuts and I cut everybody's hair at the salon and, you know, he's just another person who needs their hair done. So I'm like, that's what I'll think. So I feel like that really helped me a lot to be like, he's, you know, everyone does need that. So it's fine.
Yeah. And what you said about Paula, and here's what I saw. I just saw a beautiful person who was early in our podcast that we had a connection. And it was a very real connection. And I still, so we had a great conversation today, and same thing. Same thing I saw with Robin, same thing I see with you, same thing I see that. So, and we're all on the same team.
Yeah, that's so amazing. And that's what I think, that she is just like you in that way, where she, you know, she wants to talk to everybody. And the fact that she even looked for somebody to find, you know, that was really, really great of her to just see. However she finds people is really amazing, you know? So I was just amazed that she saw me, you know, because going from a place where when you are on X for years, and I had been on there for since 2020, really learning about Bitcoin, and having zero people ever, not just see my post, let alone like a post, you know, it was zero interaction ever. So going from that to actually having people want to spend time talking to you back and forth, and then having Paula reach out was just, it was something else, you know. It's like something I hadn't experienced before. So she's definitely an amazing person.
And how did your conversation with James go today?
It went really well. He's such a cool person. And that's what I feel like it was.
Love that guy.
He talked about you, and I wanted to bring it up, you know, but I didn't want to make it that, you know, me and his conversation, I don't want to be like, oh, but Jeff Booth's coming on next. I don't want to make it about Jeff Booth. But he did mention you and how you were, when he was learning about Bitcoin, he heard you on an episode of with Anthony Pompliano. And he said he was listening to your video, and you were describing, you know, Bitcoin and deflationary forces. And he told his wife, like, he paused it and he told his wife to come into the room. And he's like, you have to listen to this guy. So they watched you together. And then she actually, after it finished, she looked at him and she said, do we have enough Bitcoin? And she actually was like, so it was such a cool thing that, I mean, he said that look at how many people you have shown the way, you know, you showed James Lavish, you know, like a mind, like where it altered his way of thinking always, you know, after that. And
Think about this. Forget about my impact on. Think about the impact he's making on so many people, right? So yeah, James and Victoria have become good friends.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It's weird because I had a dream about. I don't even know what his wife looks like, but I had a dream about his wife last night. And I remember going up to a desk, and she had a piece of paper, and she was like, oh yeah, you're next or something. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like taking care of me or showing me the way or something like that. And I don't even know what she looks like, but I knew for some reason it was his wife. And yeah, he told me, I love to get to know people on a more personal level. So even though we all love Bitcoin, hearing about his story, about hearing how he went to Yale and he played hockey, and then he ended up, it's almost like nobody really like loves talking about themselves that much, because it feels weird to talk so much about yourself. But he was almost just going to say, oh, I asked him, were you ever thinking of going pro for hockey? And he's like, yeah, I was thinking about it, but it just didn't work out. He said, you know, the Boston Bruins signed him, but it didn't end up going through. I'm like, did they lie to you? And he's like, no, actually I got injured, you know, but he almost wouldn't have gotten into that part of the story if I didn't ask like what exactly happened. And I'm like, look at how you didn't get to do the thing that you really wanted to do, but now you're doing this, and you are sharing your knowledge and, you know, spreading the word about Bitcoin and writing your newsletter that's helping so many people understand what's happening. I'm like, if you would have just played hockey, maybe you just never would have done this, and you wouldn't have been a voice in this world. He's got so many great ideas, and I feel like I learn from everybody in a different way. So I'm very lucky to have talked to you both. I'm lucky to talk to anybody. I swear every time I've had a podcast with any, usually it's all my community members that have been on, but every single person I've spoken with, every time I finish talking to them, I say, this was the best podcast I've had so far. And it's literally been with every single person after I'm done. And I thought that with James, and I think that with you. And then every single person I talk to, I feel like I just like am so excited after I do the episode that I just want to post it for the same day. But I've got a little backup of episodes. I have like 8 of them that I haven't put out yet, so maybe less, maybe I'm catching up. But I just can't wait. I love every talk. We always get to hear interesting things that people open up to me a little bit more, which I love, because even doing hair, I get to hear from a lot of clients that you know, I feel like I become their therapist, or they start to sometimes help me out with things that I'm talking about. But what I always think, even people who are not that interesting in my chair end up being the most interesting person once I get to know them. So I'm like, if I could do that with Bitcoiners, you know, if I can like get to know Bitcoiners that way, that's even better. Cause I'm like, the people I think are amazing don't even understand Bitcoin. So I just wanted to do
they
that.
They will though. You'll bring them from both sides.
Yeah. I do. And I've played my podcast at the shop before. Like I'm putting them on in the background and, you know, people are asking for the podcast name, and it helps when people know the person. Cause they're like, I didn't know you did this, or, you know, I want to find out more about Bitcoin. And
do you take Bitcoin for payment?
I do. I mean, I always tell them, I mean, I have Strike. I could always take Strike, but a lot of people don't know about it. But what I do tell them is get Cash App, because then because people think, oh, why would I spend the Bitcoin? But then I like to tell them that even if you're just spending your fiat, it's sending it to me in Bitcoin, you know, through Cash App. And you could put it on Apple Pay. So it's just like using your Apple Pay with your Cash App card. So I like to say that because it's like easier to tell them instead of trying to send me a Lightning payment if they've never done it before. That way they can still collect Bitcoin, save it, but then deposit fiat to pay for my services if they want to pay in Bitcoin. So I try to spread the word about that. And I do, when they leave, I do tell them about Strike, because I think it's a very simple, you know, people always talk about River or what to suggest to people. I'm never sure, but I think I just tell them Strike is very easy to use and simple, and you could do Lightning payments on it.
Both of those are good options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do try to spread the word about it, but every time somebody sits down and they talk about the way the world is and the tariffs and how they're, you know, the inflation is so high, it's always the perfect opportunity to talk about how inflation is theft and how they should get Bitcoin and stuff like that. So it's fun to be able to even plant a seed, even if it's not like they leave the shop wanting to get Bitcoin that day. And even if they do, I just tell them, just buy a little bit and let it sit there. Don't worry about what the price is in the next couple of years. Like, just leave it, and that's your future. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun to kind of help. Yeah, you feel like you're showing them that the prison door is open. Do you have other plans today? Do you have other...
Believe it or not, this is my sixth podcast today.
Are you serious?
It has been a very early morning too, because I didn't realize I was flying tomorrow, so I had to move a bunch of stuff from tomorrow into today, and then I have a meeting in downtown Vancouver shortly after this. So
okay, do you get up and stretch in between?
Quickly. Okay. today was one of those days, but okay. Yeah, most times I wouldn't do that.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, thank you so much. If you have another meeting too in Vancouver, we've talked about so many great things, and thank you again for being on. It was such a great talk. I feel like I still always learn from you every time I hear you speak, and I want other people to learn from you. So that's why now what I get to play an episode, you know, that can get people to see it in a, or hear it in a very clear and, you know, easy way to understand, that it'll help more people. So thank you so much. Awesome. For doing this.
Mm-hmm. Anytime. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you. And have a great rest of your day, and have a great trip, and have a nice talk with Bukele.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye.